Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I tried to give myself a haircut last night. Limits.
How did that go?
Not well.
Is that why you're wearing a hat?
Yes, you might have noticed when I walked in I wasn't wearing a hat. And Doran Dickerson came up to me and said, basically, what happened to the back of your head? I used clippers, like the front looks okay. I can see that in the mirror, but apparently I butchered the back. So I had to go down and put on this Toronto Blue Jays hat, which I might add is a very nice hat. Would you agree?
It's a very nice hat.
Thank
yes.
you. You're wearing a Georgia sweatshirt. What are you doing? I'd rather have a Blue Jays hat than a Georgia sweatshirt.
What's wrong with a Georgia sweatshirt? I got this when I visited my grandmother down in Atlanta. She lived her last couple years of her life down there, living with some family.
And well, now I got it's a sentimental there. Story. Now I like the Georgia sweatshirt.
Yeah.
I do.
You were trying to crap on the Georgia sweatshirt.
I don't like Georgia, the team. They're always good. I don't like Alabama, the team. They're always good. I don't like that. I want other teams to be in there. Pitt's in there.
Penn State's sixth.
I know. We're going to talk about that in our show opening six pack. Why is it so hot in here? Because Crowley likes to keep it hot. That's why, Joe. There's a lot to talk about. All hell broke loose. Luckily, we got the main story yesterday, but there was another trade after that. And I would like to start, if you don't mind, Limits, with our traditional Wednesday six pack brought to you by Bet365 off the top. Thank you. Presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Let's deal with the trades first. Mike Williams, now that we've had a day to ingest this, I feel like I know everything there is to know about Mike Williams and yet nothing at all relative to how he's going to fit in this offense. I know everything about Mike Williams. Ask me a trivia question about Mike Williams. He's never fumbled in 97 career games. Knock on wood. All kinds of minutiae I know about this guy. And yet nothing at all. How is he going to fit here in this offense? I know he's a red zone weapon. It feels a little bit redundant with George Pickens, two uber athletic 50-50 winning type guys, go up and get them type guys. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily either. It just feels a little bit redundant. I wanted somebody with a different route tree, perhaps a bonsai tree. Perhaps a maple. Something different. That's what I would have preferred, like Patrick Peterson. Adam Thielen topped my list. But that doesn't mean it can't work. Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work out. Neither do you listening out there. Neither does Limits or Crowley or Dickerson or Mulsey or Pony. None of us know. Or Donnie Football even, although he might. He's going to join us later. So yeah, it feels Mike Williams like a decent consolation prize, the blessing being that we don't have to talk about that topic anymore of which receiver are the Steelers chasing right now. That's been going on for months. That's finally over. I could see a scenario where he could help a lot, and then I could see a scenario where he doesn't do much of anything. Both or either could be true. So overall, what do I give the trade if I have to give it a grade? And I do because I'm asking for that. I'm going to give it a C+. How about you?
Yeah, I give it a C+. I gave it a 2.5 yesterday, like a scale of 1 to 5 in terms of how excited I was for it. There were other options out there. Adam Thielen, I think, would have been better. I think Jacoby Myers with the Raiders, the more I looked into him and watched him, like his game. I worry about Mike Williams. He's been banged up over the years. Not so much this year. But maybe why he wasn't productive with the Jets this year is because Aaron Rodgers, frankly, just didn't like him, called him out in the media, and basically just kind of shunned him from the team, it seemed. And he was traded when Rodgers was on McAfee. How about that? And Rodgers was able to chime in on that, which was kind of funny. I think that Mike Williams can produce decent numbers here. Probably not as good as a lot of other guys could have, but he's an upgrade. Not a significant one, but he's a slight upgrade over the likes of Scotty Miller.
Yeah.
And maybe.
I mean, yes, it feels like it feels like a consolation prize. But whoever said consolation prizes were bad? Evgeny Malkin was a consolation prize. Remember that?
Well, I think there's
Ovechkin,
a big difference there.
He's the greatest consolation prize in history. Yes, I'm not comparing Evgeny Malkin to Mike Williams. I think that Malkin might be the better receiver. But you understand my point, is that consolation prizes aren't always bad. You walk off the game show with $10,000. Yeah, you could have won a million, but you go home with 10 grand. That's not bad either, is it?
Or did they walk away with Brian De La Cruz instead of Jazz Chisholm?
Yeah, right. Very good analogy. Wonderful analogy, City Limits. You're on your game this morning. Yeah. Nobody knows. Nobody could know. If you gave me a choice of most of the receivers who went before Mike Williams, I'd take nearly every one of them, plus some that didn't go. I would even take Deontay Johnson, although maybe not for this particular team, but in a vacuum, as they say. I think he's a better player than Mike Williams. I think Amari Cooper is a better player. DeAndre Hopkins is a better player. Devontae Adams is a better player. But that doesn't mean it can't work, especially in the red zone, where this dude has a really, really good resume on that. Okay, next. What were you going to say? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Now that, you know, all the dust has settled and the pieces have fallen, maybe Jakobi Meyers wasn't really available. Maybe Darius Slayton, because it seems like the Giants wanted to keep him,
Cooper
wasn't really
Cup,
available.
Same
thing with Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
Out of all the guys that got traded, I mean, Amari Cooper, the Browns weren't going to trade him to the Steelers. T. Higgins didn't get traded. DeAndre Hopkins is really the one where I think they missed and where they had to pivot to Mike Williams, because Hopkins only went for a conditional fifth. They become a fourth if they go, what, to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
So I think that's because he's a better player than Mike Williams is. That would be the one place where I can kind of shed a little doubt.
Yeah, and on the other hand, to get out of the madhouse that was Manhattan or wherever the Jets are, I think can only help, you know, to get away from Aaron Rodgers. It seems like the only thing that Mike Williams will be remembered for in New York is getting put on blast by Aaron Rodgers for running a bad pattern. Maybe out of there he regains his form. Patrick Peterson expressed concern about the ACL and his recovery from that injury last year. He's still working his way back. So, yeah, C+. Could you crack one, please, Limits?
Yes.
Item number two is Preston Smith. I mean, is there that much to say here? You know, it's Melvin Ingram. It's any other of the pass rushers that they've brought in here as veteran depth. Nice to have a fourth guy. You know, Herbig better still be your third guy. Now, Preston Smith might be a little bit better against the run. I was looking at some clips today. But he's an aging, underutilized player in Green Bay. Maybe utilized the way he should be at this point in his career. Nice depth, that's all. There's no space for a treatise on Preston Smith here. I'm sorry. He may bring a little bit. If you're going against a run team and you need some depth at that position, maybe you want him instead of Herbig. Maybe they saw that when Herbig had to play, that his best spot is as, you know, a pinch hitter in the ninth, right? With the bases loaded. But maybe this is a guy you want for the full game, if you know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, entirely. I mean, because
this guy's flat out bigger, more physical, probably better against the run.
Well, think about it this way, in terms of Herbig. They had Ade and Jeremiah Moon in there on the interception that Beanie Bishop had in the win against the Giants. So, I mean, those guys aren't applying pressure. So, if you're able to get Herbig back and be able to apply it with T.J. Watt and Highsmith, who really should have been on the sideline at that point, but were, it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers were watching with everybody else, probably in horror, when it was T.J. Watt and Highsmith on the sidelines and the Giants having the ball late. They wound up getting an interception, but we'd still be talking about that if let's say, the Giants score on that play or have a big play to put them in scoring position with both of your guys out with like 42 seconds left in the game. No offense to Jeremiah Moon limits, but you got to do better than that. And I heard somebody say this morning, they quoted Ernie Accorsi as saying you can't have too many pass rushers. I don't even know if Preston Smith is still a good pass rusher, but it's a nice, seemingly a nice little depth move. I heard other people yesterday talking about the price for these guys. How much time do you want to spend on that? A fifth round pick and a seventh round pick? If there was a meter that measured how little I care, it wouldn't even register. I don't care. They've had two great drafts the past 2 years without a fifth round pick. I don't even remember the last time they made their last fifth round pick was Isaiah Loudermilk, a guy they should have been trying to replace at yesterday's deadline. Oh, this was rich. I got a tweet from somebody. Once again, somebody incapable of any sort of civil interaction about a defensive lineman, about Chase Young or another defensive lineman. Chase Young's been playing end in a 4-3 for his whole career. Pay attention, clown, you know, stuff like that. So you're telling me that Cam Hayward couldn't go play in a 4-3? You're telling me a talented defensive lineman can't play in any scheme? But more to the point, if you've been paying attention at all to football, you know it's mostly sub-package football anyway. 3-4, 4-3, what? More than half the time they're in sub-package football. If you can't figure out how to use a good defensive lineman in any scheme, use him creatively, then you're an idiot. As you are if you think that guys are pigeonholed into a 4-3 or a 3-4 defense in 2024. And I would use Hayward as a great example. Do you think a team out there that plays a, quote, 4-3 would be like, what are we going to do with Cam Hayward? He's been in a 3-4 his whole career. No, he hasn't. He's been in 8 million different formations, playing 8 million different roles because he's a great player. That one gave me a good laugh before I blocked the guy. Him and somebody else, 4-3 and 3-4. No, Chase Young he's pigeonholed as a 4-3 defensive end. He couldn't possibly play anywhere else. And then I see where Preston Smith is a guy who plays with his hand in the ground in a 4-3 or a 3-4 as an edge rusher. Oh my God, you're allowed to do that? I thought you were pigeonholed in one position for your whole career. Just incredible, the stuff you get. But again, it could have just been a football discussion. And instead, it has to be some sort of, you know, gotcha attack. Like Tony. And just the lack of civility combined with enormous ignorance is not a good cocktail there, Ballsy. I'll have a little bit of uncivility with a dash of ignorance, please. Thank you.
Just another one added to the block party, huh? Did you make up with Toy Called God yesterday?
No, I never did. I don't even remember what his tweet was about. These were two people, though, who think that people are pigeonholed into 4-3 and 3-4 defenses in 2024. But that does speak to the Steelers' defensive line, however. And that's where I'd like to go next after I get your thoughts on the one and only Preston Smith.
I like the Preston Smith move. The fact that they can get out of his deal, him, he signed for another 2 years, but it's not guaranteed at 12 and 12.5 million over the next 2 years. I mean, he has 68.5 sacks in his career. He had 8 sacks last year. He's a productive player when he's on the field and utilized properly. I don't know what happened this year with Green Bay and why he was not having the same level of production.
Well, they have younger players.
That's why.
That they want to use.
He really fell out of favor there.
Yeah. And so, he's also getting old.
And it's a seventh-round pick. So, I mean, you can move off of him if you want. They have the money this year to be able to pay him on the cap space. It's a good move. It's a good move for depth. No, I mean, no more DeMarvin Leal. They've been banged up at that position. I mean, you really don't want Jeremiah Moon pass rushing. He's better at special teams. So, yeah, really good job to shore up some depth. Maybe you put him on the defensive line, too, and helps there with Ogunjobi being a disappointment.
He's sort of a half moon as a pass rusher, isn't he?
Yeah, a crescent moon.
Yeah, you don't want a crescent moon in that position. Next. Thank you, Limits, for your generosity.
You're quite welcome.
I do need to tell people that Off the Top's presented by JP Roofing and Siding. The big boys coming on today's show. We're also efforting perhaps an observer from New York.
Oh, we're not efforting. We're confirmed. 12:05, Rich Cimini of ESPN will join us.
The great Cimini. I love this. All right. So we're going to talk about Mike Williams. What the hell happened with Mike Williams in New York, and what kind of player will he be here? Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. I don't know what I'm drinking here this morning. Well, I do. It's Kenyan coffee from a place in Mount Lebanon. And it's powerful. Let me just put it to you that way.
Kenyan coffee?
Kenyan.
What
Kenyan
is in that?
Beans. Well, I mean, beans. They're... What do you mean, what's in it?
Well, I'm not a coffee drinker. So it's kind of foreign to me when you say Kenyan coffee.
Yeah, well, it is to me too, clearly. But I can tell you, it's quite powerful. You can interact with Limits on the fan text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. I think that the Steelers failed to fortify themselves on the defensive line. I look at Preston Smith more as an edge rusher, although I will say he can be more helpful than Herbig against the run. He will. Having said that, they've been run on by teams that don't normally run. Like this Steeler defense, here's how I look at it. After three games, I honestly thought this defense had a chance to be Mike Tomlin's best since 2010. I mean, they were downright destructive. And since then, they've only been destructive to themselves. They were horrendous at Indy. I mean, that was just a blight, getting shredded by Flacco and Richardson in his brief time out there to the tune of 358 yards and basically whatever they wanted. 8-for-15 on third down. They ran for 100. Great defenses don't have more than a game like that. Some don't even have a game like that. I think we've seen that Joe Flacco is turning into maybe the first time a 40-year-old quarterback. I'm sorry, Limits. He's only 39. He turns 40 in January. Then the Steelers came back with a horrific game against Dallas. That was their worst game of the year defensively. They gave up 445 yards on their home field. No great defense does that. Are you kidding me? 445? Including over 100 rushing to a team that couldn't run the ball on their home field. The Raiders game doesn't count. They went against some guy named Aiden O'Connell. I'm not even looking at that game. I don't care about that game. Any defense should be able to shut down Aiden O'Connell. Then you had rusty Aaron Rodgers and then Daniel Jones and even the Giants. And by the way, in that Dallas game, they also gave up two long, late touchdown drives. These are the things that defenses that aspire to be great simply don't do. And then in come the Giants to Acrisure and they roll up 400 yards? What? 394 to be precise. And they run the ball for 157 yards. I wasn't exactly heartened that Mike Tomlin said yesterday, well, I couldn't help but notice the Giants ran it in their next game too. Who cares? They ran all over the place here. I'm worried about this defense. I'm going to tell you that right now, Wonder Twin. I'm concerned. They're taking a big leap up from where they've been, and they haven't been very good, I don't think, since the first three games. And they got the benefit. Now, in retrospect, I think it's fair to say, although they did their job, so they get credit for it, they got Kirk Cousins off the couch coming off an Achilles, Bo Nix before he was ready, and half of Justin Herbert. Since then, ancient Joe Flacco, wildly up and down Dak Prescott. Somebody named Aiden O'Connell, a shell of Aaron Rodgers and Daniel Jones. And they've had uneven results. Now they get Jaden Daniels and one of the best offenses in football doing some historic things. The next one is, too, Baltimore is doing some historic things in the run game. And then you get Cleveland. That's always a tough game, especially Thursday night there. So basically, you're going to get double doses, if they're healthy, of Lamar and Joe Burrow. Jalen Hurts has been on fire. In the last five games, he's got 14 total touchdowns, passing and running, and no picks. And Patrick Mahomes. That's a lot of games against good offenses and really good quarterbacks. It's just a different level. So that's the good news and the bad news. The bad news is this defense might be exposed as fraudulent. The good news is, man, what a canvas to paint your season on if you're a great defense. Bring in Lamar, the MVP. Bring in Joe Burrow back in top form. Bring in Jalen Hurts, Super Bowl guy 2 years ago, MVP candidate looking like that again. Bring in Patrick Mahomes. Bring in Jackson and Burrow again. We'll show you what we got. I'm just not all that confident, and there's a bunch of good running backs involved there too, and that's where we get back to the defensive line. With an underachieving Larry Ogunjobi, an uneven Keanu Benton, Cam's been great. PFF says the best player in the league at his position, but then who you got? It's a long freaking season here. He's 35. He's 35 years old. Is he ready for nine more of these? I hope. He could be. If anybody is at that age, it would be him. But after them, who? Isaiah Loudermilk? Dean Lowry?
Mo Adams?
He's out. The other guys are hurt. I don't know why they didn't go out and fortify themselves along the defensive line. With apologies to the guy yesterday who said you don't want to get Chase Young because he's been a 4-3 defensive end his whole career and he couldn't possibly play in a 3-4. Impossible. Once you're in that 4-3 defense, man, you're in that for your whole life. You can't possibly go to another team and play anywhere else. And I'm not saying him, by the way, and I wasn't canvassing just for him. But somebody, some depth along that defensive line, I'm going to say this right now, oh, limitless wonder. If this season happens to fall apart in the second half, we're going to be pointing at depth on the defensive line as the number one reason. That's what I would tell you right now. Thoughts?
So you don't think adding Preston Smith helps the defensive line at all?
I mean, it depends on how you want to define that. He's a depth guy, first of all.
Right.
And he's not a run stuffer along the line. You know what I mean? He's an edge guy. He can help against the run. How much is he going to play? I'm talking about the big boys. The big boys up front. Not an edge rusher who can also play a little bit against the run, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them playing him maybe if they go to a three down lineman type of set where he's one of the outside guys lining up over a guard. I mean, it's non-traditional for him over the last however many seasons it's been, but I'm in agreement with you that I have to see more from them against quality opponents because it has not been there. I mean, they've not played a very good offense this year, like at all. The one that they did was Atlanta, and they caught Kirk Cousins during the first game of the year when he hadn't played in, what, over a year and a half or so, and no preseason games. So I'm more so concerned with their secondary maybe getting a little bit exposed outside of Joey Porter, who I think will be fine. But, I mean, Dante Jackson, is the dam about to break? He wasn't great in, what was it, the Giants game? Probably had his worst game of his career. Beanie Bishop's been good, but Cam Sutton, we'll see.
Yeah, at least he provides some depth here. I'm with you. There are still some concerns in the secondary. I agree with that. I just think depth up front, and I'm talking about the big boys. Now, one way around that would be if Ogunjobi comes alive for a big second half, and if Benton, I thought he was going to be a star this year. He's had some star moments, but I would call him slightly disappointing so far. I think he has a lot more in him, though, coming out of the bye. So those things would be helpful. Next. The first college football rankings came out, Limits, which inspired your choice of a Georgia sweatshirt today. Very impressive, I might add. And Pitt and Penn State were both in there. Adam Crowley has been misrepresenting what I'm saying about Pitt these days. My point was that Pitt, if they go 9-3 and lose to the only good teams on their schedule, the only three good teams on the whole schedule, is that like a really good year? And why, if we were talking a week ago about Pitt and Penn State playing in a playoff game, do we suddenly ratchet down the expectations for Pitt with a loss and ratchet them up with Penn State for a loss? I realize Penn State has more resources. So if you want to admit right off the top, before we ever talk about this, that Penn State is the vastly superior program with vastly superior resources and therefore should be held to an entirely different standard than Pitt, okay. You move along those lines. I'm going to move along the lines of why shouldn't we expect more from Pitt? And right now at 7-1 and 18th, that's great. Although they just lost their chance to go to the playoff because they got destroyed on the road by SMU. But that's okay. When Pitt loses a game like that, they get a pat on the back because they're in the first college football rankings. When Penn State loses a close game to a great Ohio State team, they get wrecked. They get absolutely crushed. So we're not just talking about two different levels of expectations. We're talking about two entirely different worlds that they're living in. Okay. Is Crowley in there?
Crowley completely distracted me. Yes, he came in, tried to wave to you, and then waved to me, and he did not say one word.
I just think that there's a higher standard that Pitt could be held to. Their coach is making more than Notre Dame's coach. They've been sending players to the NFL. They sent the most in the ACC a couple years ago. I think expectations changed when they started 7-0. And now I feel compelled to apologize for it. And that's the whole problem. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I expected Pitt to go to the playoff. And I think the season will be disappointing if they go 9-3. Can you still have a pretty good season and have it be disappointing too? I think if they go 9-3 and lose to the only three good teams on their schedule, they won't be ranked at the end of the season. And they will have gone, 2-3 down the stretch? I'm sorry. I would consider that a disappointment. I apologize. If Penn State goes 9-3, everybody in the world is fired. Again, those aren't two slightly different sets of expectations. Those are living in two entirely different worlds. And if I were a Pitt fan, I wouldn't accept that world. I would expect more. I'm sorry. Why do I keep feeling compelled to apologize?
I don't know.
That's the problem.
That you try to apologize too much.
That I feel compelled to apologize for criticizing Pitt for getting blown to smithereens at SMU and having any hope of a playoff fall apart. And that if they go 9-3 and lose to the only three good teams on their schedule, I'm not so inclined to pat them on the back and say, great season, let's all go to Dairy Queen. What's your favorite Dairy Queen treat?
The Blizzard. Oreo Blizzard.
The Oreo Blizzard. Yeah. I prefer the Butterfinger. I remember Rob Rossi's family used to have a Dairy Queen right around the corner from here, Limits.
And you used to go to it all the time,
apparently. Could have gone there after losing games. I could have treated you to a Dilly Bar or to an Oreo Blizzard.
The Blizzard would have been the choice.
Thoughts?
You know, they live in two different realities in terms of the expectations for Pitt and Penn State. Should Pitt be higher? Yes. Penn State, I think, is at the very top. I don't know if, you know, James Franklin says, oh, well, we go 10-2 every year, and people are very disappointed about that. Their expectations internally should probably be a little bit higher.
Did yours shift for Pitt when they started 7-0?
Yes, significantly. You know, SMU and Clemson, I thought they'd probably lose one of those games. I thought they'd maybe lose the Clemson game and win the SMU game. And as more and more of the season went on, I felt better and better about the Clemson game and just not sure about the SMU game. I didn't know how good they were, but let's not mistake this. They got throttled against SMU. That was a domination, 48-11 at one point. I mean, sure, they made the score look better in the last 6 minutes with two garbage time touchdowns, but Pitt should end this season 10-2. I mean, if they lose to Clemson, okay. But I see a path for them to be 11-1. I mean, yeah. Why can't you beat Virginia at home?
The one game makes a big difference in that scenario.
Yes.
Difference between 9-10 and perhaps at least having one high-quality win, or, yeah, I would say high-quality.
And you beat Clemson.
That makes a difference in my perception of Pitt's season.
They can finish this season in the top 15. They beat Clemson. If they went out, they could finish it in the top 14, 15, maybe 13 and just miss out.
Yes. All right. 412-928-9370. One more item I want to get to because it's significant. Oh, little wonder twin. Not that you're little. You're perfectly normal. Normally sized. I don't know why I always throw in the adjective little.
You love to try to knock my weight.
I haven't done that. You said.
There you go again.
Can I take you to Dairy Queen after the show?
I would love that.
All right. Oreo blizzards on me. The Penguins had a very interesting game last night. I thought they played well. Not that I would take them to Dairy Queen after they gave up two late goals. I thought they played well for most of it. But these late implosions, they're lucky, by the way, it didn't happen against Anaheim. We haven't even talked about that game 2 games ago. Do you remember what happened last year against Anaheim? Limits? Early in the season?
Wasn't good, I know that.
That was the famous or infamous game in which the Penguins had a 2-man advantage at the end of regulation almost exactly a year to the date earlier, October 30th last year, Halloween this year. They had a 2-man advantage at the end of the game and somehow lost. They lost 4-3.
At least it wasn't the game where they scored on their own goal in Arizona.
No, they topped themselves there. But this last game against Anaheim, they almost blew it at the end again. They'd played a pretty good defensive game, and then all of a sudden it became, you know, a shootout before the shootout, like in regulation with Anaheim going in on breakaways. So they got to learn how to finish. But to me, the most significant thing here was Sidney Crosby with goal number 598. And it was vintage, and it came off of a pass from Gino. Bob Grove had a stat that I'm forgetting. Oh, 87. Did you know that's Sid's number?
Limits? No.
He has 87 backhanded goals in his career.
Wow.
How about that little treat? Huh?
And Sid and Gino playing together has been kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I've been enjoying that. That's what I'm trying to take from the Penguins these days, is just enjoying, what do you want to call it, the nostalgia tour, but also, you know, watching those two play together, they can still get things done. It's not like they can't play anymore. Sid's unbelievable, really. Lately, back in top form. I'm trying to find that number. Grover also says the Penguins have held a 2-goal lead in 5 of their last 8 games. They've lost 4 of those. To me, that's as big a difference as any and maybe the biggest in early Mike Sullivan era Penguins to what we've seen these past multiple years. He went years without losing third period leads, let alone 2-goal leads. Like, they would go a whole season. You know, the Penguins are 37-0 when leading after 2. Now you expect every lead just to go down the drain. I can't find. Oh, there it is. Sid's goal tonight was his 87th on a backhand in his regular season career. How does Grover keep track of that? Does he have a little symbol for backhand when Sid scores that and then just charts it game to game?
I really do wonder because he has such great stats. Jimmy Trdinich with the Pirates always has great stats. I really wonder how some of these guys find these numbers that just seemingly are so fascinating. Like 87 backhanded goals. Who would think to keep track of that? But again, it just shows his multiple ways
his
to be able to score.
Stick-to-itiveness. Yes, no pun intended. Gino's first power play goal of the season. You know, we've reached the point, and he's playing pretty well with Sid, but we've reached the point where it's months between power play goals. It's better
over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today. Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Limits, do we have Ben Roethlisberger's reaction to this yet? Is the football and podcast out, or did he take a week off?
I'd love to know what
he thinks of Mike Williams.
I'll have to check the Channel 7 channels.
Yes, you should be scouring the lines right now for a little Ben reaction to this. You do have Tomlin from earlier this season when they played the Jets. Is that what I gather here? And his comment on Mike Williams then?
That's correct.
Let's hear it.
Can't say enough about Mike Williams and his ability to stretch the field. He's stretching the field for him this year, but he stretched the field for him over the course of his career. I think he's one of those 15 yards per catch average guys over the course of his career. And so that captures your attention.
Yeah, and it has to capture a defense's attention too. Now, again, I was with Peterson on Thielen because it's more of a contrast with Pickens. That's not to say it's a bad thing to have two guys who can stretch a defense, two guys who can win jump balls, things like that. But if you remember what Peterson said, it was along the lines of, in fact, I have the quote here, Adam Thielen's one of those guys where you can kind of put him anywhere. He can manipulate these mismatches inside the numbers. You add another element inside and move him around in different places. That's the kind of guy I wanted. It is. And I think a safety blanket for Russell Wilson on quick throws, you know, is the kind of guy I wanted. Having said that, again, Williams' specialty is the red zone, and it never hurts to have two guys there. Plus, you know, I think Calvin Austin and Jefferson, everybody becomes a weapon in the NFL when you have a mature passing game led by a guy who can throw the damn ball. Right, Limits? I'm not comparing Russell Wilson to Tom Brady, although they'll both be in the Hall of Fame someday. But Brady won Super Bowls with less than stellar casts. You know what I mean? We've seen Patrick Mahomes do that. We see other guys make good receivers. Josh Allen's having a really good year right now. An MVP year. Somebody want to name his number one wide receiver? Good quarterbacks in good schemes make pass catchers. They do. They raise the level of play the way a good point guard would. All of a sudden you have Tony Campbell, who I drafted in my first NBA fantasy draft. We're talking almost 35, 40 years ago, Limits, long before you were born.
There were fantasy drafts then.
People, Magic Johnson could make that guy good. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden, I don't think it's any accident that we notice a little bit more of Van Jefferson and Calvin Austin. It's because you have an actual passing game. So they become weapons. You know what I'm getting at here, Limits, right?
When you look at the teams that have gone to the Super Bowl over the last couple of years, it's Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan, explosive weapons. Philadelphia, Sirianni, offensive coach, Jalen Hurts. It's a lot of high-powered offenses with defenses who are strong, but there's more of a focus on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, you're right.
What I'm getting at here in terms of the Steelers' perspective is, can they flip it on their head with obviously a defensive-focused culture, but offensively overcoming a lot more because of Russell Wilson being the quarterback and trying to take away some of those glaring obstacles of not having a decorated wide receiver core like some of the other teams.
Well, they do have a star, though, and that goes a long way. I think George Pickens, at the least, is an emerging star, and I think the best side of George Pickens has emerged here with the relentlessly positive Russell Wilson and also a guy who can throw the ball accurately to him, Russell Wilson. I think we've seen the best of George Pickens emerge here, both in demeanor and in quality of play. A great quarterback does that. A great point guard does that, or a good one. I don't know that Russell's great at this point in his career, but he's certainly good to very good, I think, still. So, man, it sure helps to have that guy. It's not like he's got a bunch of no-names to throw to. I think if you ask defensive coordinators and defensive backs around the league to list the most talented receivers in the game, George Pickens would be in everybody's top 10 for sure, and maybe higher for some. And Russ is bringing out the best in him. So you start with that, and then, you know, maybe you can ad lib a little bit. Maybe they get Freiermuth more involved. I'll say this much, though. You would have asked me a year ago if the Steelers are going into a game against a high-powered offense. I would have said, man, they're at a disadvantage. The defense better play great. They better keep this a low-scoring mud fest that they can win on a Boswell field goal, you know, 9-7 or 4-2 at the end. Now I feel like they're going up against Washington, and Cliff Kingsbury is absolutely humming with this offense right now, and Jaden Daniels and a bunch of weapons. They are powerful. I feel like the Steelers can hang with teams now. That's the thing. And I don't want to go too far, and I won't. You know, it's not the 1999 Rams. I don't think anybody expected that. What they expected and wanted was an adult NFL offense that can put up 30 in a given week. Oh, my God, 30. And 400 yards and move the ball up and down the field like other offenses do. Maybe have an explosive play once in a while. Maybe even two on the same drive?
Whoa.
Wow.
Matt yes. Canada could never.
Matt Canada was 0 for 44 on 400-yard games. Arthur Smith is 3 for 8. Kenny Pickett was 0 for 25 in 400-yard games for the offense. Russell Wilson's 2 for 2. I mean, it's just graphic statistics reflecting what I think can be a very, very good offense. You have a quarterback. Radical improvement on what they had earlier this year and last year and the year before and the year before. Russell Wilson's better than late stage Ben even in his final year. A two-headed monster of a running back that's as good maybe as any running tandem in football right now. That's what I feel about those guys. A new version of Najee Harris, and a finally healthy Jaylen Warren. So you got quarterback. You have an elite, I think, tandem anyway, of running backs. Tandem. You have an emerging star receiver to go to. I think a good tight end to go to. Maybe a secondary weapon now in Williams, but other guys you can throw the ball to, including your running backs. And an improving offensive line that's going to hopefully welcome back Zach Frazier, who might already be a top five player at his position. Still some issues. Again, I don't want to go crazy here. But the other thing is that Russ is only two games in here. When he came back against the Jets, he had taken zero meaningful snaps in about 10 months outside of those nothing reps in the exhibition season. So to me, it only stands to reason that he's going to get better. That's just basic logic. He's going to get better, feel more comfortable, feel more in rhythm, and develop a stronger rapport with his receivers. That just seems like an obvious observation. So yeah, man, they go into a game against Washington and all the points they're putting up in yards, and I feel like they can hang if the defense isn't able to stop them or even slow them. This is emerging perhaps into an offense that can win you a shootout. And you might need to do that along the line here. Forget about this week. If you make the playoffs, you're going to run into a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes or a Lamar Jackson or a CJ Stroud or a Joe Burrow maybe. You might need to win a game like that, to your point. And those offenses that you mentioned, man, it seems like a lot of high-powered offenses get to the Super Bowl. Doesn't always mean the Super Bowl itself will be high-scoring. I think of the Sean McVay offense that went up against Brady in that horrible Super Bowl. I think the final score was 13-3. Just awful. But in order to get there, Brady had to go into Kansas City and outgun Mahomes 41-38 in overtime. And McVay's teams were putting up huge numbers. You need to be able to win all different kinds of games to get where you want to go in the NFL. And the Steelers just simply have not had that capability for multiple years. And they might not still, but I think they're headed fast in that direction. I really do. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I like this offense. watching it against the Giants, I couldn't believe it was the Steelers. I don't care if it was the Giants, who have an okay defense with some really good players on it, by the way. But there have been plenty of bad teams, bad defenses go against Matt Canada over those 44 games in which he never got 400 yards. And it seemed to always manifest itself early in games where there were, you know, ridiculous numbers. Like, oh, the Steelers haven't scored a first quarter touchdown in, you know, 36 games. Stuff like that. That was the Steelers we were watching in the last game? Using wildly different formations at wildly different tempos to keep a defense off balance, going hurry up, first drive of the game, shotgun here, behind center there, play action here, power run there, down the field here, roll out there, and the Giants had to call timeout? That was the Steelers? Keeping anybody's defense that much off balance early in the game? Yeah, the red zone could have been better. Some player malfunction in the red zone. I don't think it was at all scheme malfunction. That's important because player malfunction could be corrected. First, let's get to the red zone with ease. And that's what they did. Then we can worry about execution in the red zone. That game and the final three quarters of the Jets game were just mind-blowing in some ways. They really were. We'll see where it goes. I'm optimistic offensively and, crazy enough, not as much defensively. Your thoughts, too. 928-9370. Listen to this show every Wednesday today to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday right around noon at the 937thefan.com contesting page. And for that, also, by the way, 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Starkey's Card of the Week means it's time for our friend Jeff Patton from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. We like to call him General Patton, and we have a guess every week as to the Card of the Week. I don't know, number 598 for Sid kind of stands out to me, Wonder Twin. I'm going to go Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, but I remember we had a Sidney Crosby card a couple weeks ago with the 1600
point. That's never stopped
point.
The General.
Oh, I know. He loves throwing out Ohtani cards, too.
Who was the World Series MVP? I don't
Freddie
even know.
Freddie Freeman. That's my,
right.
That's my pick.
That's a good guess. General, how are you, and what do you got?
Gentlemen, good morning. I'm not going to hold it against you that you don't get this week's, because I'm going to go off the board a little bit. One of the great traditions in the United States of America, we stop in honor of our veterans. Next Monday is Veterans Day. How better than to honor Rocky Blyer,
ooh,
the veteran? I got a Rocky Blyer rookie card. We're going a little off the grid this week.
Wow. Now, I'm assuming Rocky had a mustache as a rookie as well. Is that right?
He looks exactly the same.
And was he number 20 as a rookie?
He was number 20 as a rookie, yeah. And ironically, this card was from 1975, 5 years later, because obviously he battled to get there.
Yeah.
And he actually told me that he was in a hospital after his accident, and Mr. Rooney sent him a postcard, and it said, "Rock, get better fast. We need you."
Yeah. He saved the spot for him. Unbelievable.
How great is that?
And what a choice by you, General. And what a man you are.
We got a 1975 Topps Rocky Blyer.
How
about
that?
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man.
That's a great pick.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Happy Veterans Day.
You too. And your chance to win that card comes from going to our website, 937thefan.com, to our contesting page. Fan Weather, brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. It's here, the Chevy Red Tag event, now through December 2nd. 0% APR for well-qualified buyers. Full terms at sunchevy.com. 71 degrees today with cloudy skies. Up next, I'll take your calls. We can have a discussion about the Steelers as they head into this 9-game stretch. They almost always finish 5-4 in their final 9 games under Mike Tomlin. 2 years ago, it was better than that. I think 1 year recently, it was 4-4-1. But the other 3 or 4 were 5-4, which would be plenty good enough for me. That would be an 11-win season. Would it be enough to win the AFC North? I don't know. Do you agree with me that I'm unbelievably more concerned about the defense than the offense going into these final nine games.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.